measles, vaccines, and money. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. More than 150 people have been diagnosed with the measles since the start of this year, with most of the cases in the Pacific Northwest. Medical experts blame people who reject the scientific evidence of the safety and effectiveness of vaccines for allowing the preventable disease to spread. Today, a Senate committee will hold a hearing on how to respond. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more on some of the funding issues here.
More than 40% of the measles cases this year are in Washington state. John Wiesman is health secretary there and is testifying today.
Folks are working essentially day and night to try and control this outbreak.
He wants more funding for the Centers for Disease Control and a national campaign to combat misinformation and promote vaccination, because sick kids aren't the only consequence for the state.
Just for the governmental public health system so far, it's about $1.2 million for this response.
Kristen Ayersman at the Minnesota Department of Public Health says they spent about $1 million during a measles outbreak in 2017, and that was just on staffing.
Now, that does not include the cost for vaccine. That does not include the cost of children who are hospitalized.
She says while states control the laws that allow people to opt out of vaccinations, the federal government should be informing the public about the risks of doing so. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Want to check markets? The FTSE index in London is up 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures reach up 0.1%. Britain's central bank, sometimes in currency trading circles referred to as the Queen, is setting up a system to make euros readily available in case markets go haywire when the UK exits the European Union. With a Brexit deadline later this month and no firm plan in place for an orderly withdrawal from Europe, the Bank of England says the new weekly auctions of euros will help ensure banks don't run short of cash in the event of, quote, significant market volatility. The annual meeting of China's ruling Communist Party, the National People's Congress, has opened in Beijing today with a warning that the economy there faces a tough struggle. The BBC's Beijing correspondent John Sudworth has more.
As always, the premier's speech was full of mind-boggling detail. 13 million new urban jobs created last year, 2,500 miles of high-speed railway built. But it was accompanied by a substantial measure of gloom. Growth in consumption is slowing, Li Keqiang said. Local budgetary deficits are large, and external pressures, especially the US-China trade war, are having an adverse effect. In response, he promised tax cuts, more bank lending, and in an announcement that won a loud murmur of approval from the 3,000 delegates, a reduction in road tolls. For China's ruling Communist Party, increased economic uncertainty brings increased political risk. Mr. Li spoke of the need for strengthening party loyalty and tightening the control over religion.
The BBC's John Sudworth. We've been reporting that Lyft will become the first smartphone-controlled car service to issue stock to the public. This will be the first major launch of a new tech stock in 2019. Without a firm valuation yet, it's too early to talk about if it's worth it to investors. So let's take a turn and look at whether driving for the Lyfts, Ubers, TaskRabbits, and restaurant delivery-type companies is worth it. Some respected economists some years ago had found the percentage of people doing gig economy work was sharply rising through 2015. But then fresher data found the gig work was way overstated. Eileen Applebaum is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research and a senior economist. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So what is this? You have some data there. People like real jobs, maybe ones with benefits?
It turns out that what they thought was a trend was actually a blip. And so now we are having the survey that was done by the Department of Labor. And what do we find? We find that, in fact, the share of workers in these non-standard work arrangements has actually declined. And that means that 9 out of 10 of us have, as our main job, a regular job with a regular employer.
You know, it's interesting, though. I mean, the economy came back. People moved who were trying out gig economy work may have moved back into the more traditional workforce. But there were some attractions to gig work. I mean, you could set your own hours on your own schedule. I guess those lures were not enough to keep people in that kind of work.
Most gig economy workers hold the job for 3 months or less. It's a really very small fraction, about 12% of gig economy workers who do it year round. So yes, there's a core of people who seem to really like it, but for most people, it's a stopgap or it's something you do to earn a little extra money. It's not something that you are thinking is going to make a major contribution to household income.
Now, we are in what many economists call full employment. We could discuss that as a useful term or not. But if the economy sputters, you would think that people may drift back into this kind of gig economy work.
That does seem to be a real possibility. People have to cobble together a living however they can. These jobs are something that you might hold. Meanwhile, you're looking for your next real job. The other thing to notice is that we see this gig economy work mainly in big cities. But even in those cities, it's only less than 3% of workers who are engaged in these activities.
Eileen Applebaum is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research and a senior economist. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And what would you do for free flights for a year on an airline? Well, JetBlue has a contest in which people willing to delete all the pictures on their Instagram and put up JetBlue PR instead are eligible. Three people get picked for free tickets. Reminds me of those old radio station promotions where you get a cutout stencil of the call letters and suntanned the station under your belly. Our producers are Victoria Craig, Michael Lipkin, Candice Manriquez-Wren, Daniel Shin, and Sasha Woodruff. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.